This episode of the Edible Valley is brought to you once again by Tanitus Farm. Heather and Alan McWilliam generously donated a beautiful pasture-raised chicken for our Edible Valley test kitchen tonight. Raising chickens over grass allows the birds to range freely for insects, greens, and have fresh bedding daily. The chicken has wonderful, flavorful meat, even the breast. It's super juicy and delicious. Check out Tanitus product at their farm gate Saturday mornings on Burns Road in Dove Creek. And if you stop by, let Heather know you heard about them on Edible Valley so they know that they're supporting us and it's getting out there and people are hearing about them through us. Their product is also available at Edible Island in Courtney, Seeds Market in Cumberland, and many of the Valley's finest restaurants, including Atlas and Avenue Bistro. Thank you ever so much, Alan and Heather, for continuing support in keeping this local food podcast alive. Welcome to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Blaine Prowse.
And I am Jonathan Fraser. And we're inviting you once again to join with us on our ongoing adventure of our Edible Valley.
Hey, John. It feels like it's been forever since I've been in studio.
It's nice to have you back in the studio with me here, Blaine. That's great.
Yeah, it was too bad I missed out last week. You had a really good interview with Leah from Weinberg's Good Food.
We had a great conversation. Darren stepped in there. And he actually got down to the store the other day.
Oh, good.
He grabbed some sausages and some cheese, and he said he had a great time down there.
Fantastic.
I'm hoping to head down there tomorrow, actually. I was going to get together with my parents, and they've just gotten back from a cruise.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've finished their full navigation of the planet.
Yeah, I think so.
So they got in, and so I thought I would head down and have some coffee down there tomorrow. It'd be
cool.
Interesting little drive for us.
So. Yeah, nice. Yeah, I'd like to extend my thanks to Darren for pinch hitting for me. I had a work thing come up that had been on the books for some time, and it just never got worked out. So anyways, we got it done, and hopefully that'll be the last time I have to miss one. That kind of thing, but anyways,
but at least
life happens. So
Darren said if there is ever a problem again, that he would be quite willing to come in and join in and chat with us because I think he enjoys doing this just as much as we do. So.
Yeah, good.
So our episode today, I guess, is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
Our guest wasn't able to make it today. Not a big deal because we thought we'd have a chance to talk about the test kitchen.
Right, yeah.
Get Drex to sit down with us a little bit and chat about that. So.
Yeah. Drex, our photographer / producer / enjoyer of our food.
Yeah. So yeah, that's today's show. But I guess before we get to that, we have a few issues, or not issues, but events
topics
that have happened, topics,
yeah,
things that have come up over the last little bit.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have anything you want to start off with, or.
Well, I guess my big news is that I successfully made bacon for the first time ever.
That is a success.
Very exciting.
We sampled it tonight, actually. It was amazing. So
I'm quite happy with how it turned out.
Yes.
I can't really get over the fact that I made bacon. I've been wanting to do that my whole life, and I just did it. And I had a good conversation with ex-guest Brian, your neighbor there, Brian McCormick, and he gave me a good rundown on what to do and lent me a video about it and was very... built my confidence up, so I just went for it and brined it for a week, threw it in the smoker for a few hours, and it turned out great. So
yeah, it had huge flavor in that, actually. So
it really did. Yeah, yeah.
Picked up a lot of smoke. So
yeah, and it's not greasy, like it's really dry. It's nicely dry, so it doesn't get your hands all greasy and like commercial bacon does. Mm-hmm. It seems like. So anyways, pat myself on the back a whole bunch about it, but it's pretty good. So that was exciting. And yeah, I went to the candlelight dinner at the Union Street Grill 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. We did bring it up on the last episode.
Yeah.
But we're kind of really interested to see how that went for
you. It was really cool.
Was it?
The whole ambiance was just, it was just really nice. It was nice and dark in there. We were able to just sit and chat. And it wasn't overly busy, so there wasn't a lot of noise in there. So it was just a nice, quiet atmosphere, which it's too bad because I would have liked to see their house full for that, but maybe people had been and gone by the time we got there. But yeah, we just sat there and we ate and had coffee after, and I saw Hans-Peter Meyer show up with a whole bunch of guests.
I heard they were quite busy with picture taking.
They were taking a lot of pictures, yeah. It seemed like everybody at their table was taking pictures.
Wonderful. The joys of Instagram. And
yeah, for sure. And I was really happy that I was able to find something on your on their menu that didn't that was within my dietary restrictions that I've imposed on myself. So there was like I was able I got their rib dinner and it had mashed yams, not mashed potatoes, and a salad and ribs, and it was simple but delicious. And so yeah, it was great.
And I think so, I think they're maybe doing another one.
Yeah, I hope they do it again because it was I think it's a nice little event.
Right. Excellent.
Yeah.
Perfect. I did I saw a whole bunch of photos actually from the One Big Table. Aaron's One Big Table with the Paris theme.
As
of
did
the
I,
20s.
Yes.
Looked like they had a lot of fun there and some very beautiful looking food too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, how many guests did they end up, did they fill it up?
I actually haven't heard the final count on that one, but it looked like there was quite a few people there. So they kind of shoot for 40 people, but Connie told me they did sell out. So
oh, good. Right on.
That was a, sounds like a good event.
One day we'll have to get to one of those.
Yeah, I should have gone. I was kind of toying with the idea.
We both had the night off last night, too. We totally
could have. I was going to, and then I kind of thought if I went, I might just try and sneak in the kitchen and, and help out because I feel more comfortable in that place. So
I would have had to come up with a costume. That's why I didn't go.
Yeah, good excuse. other things happening? Well, Movember's still happening.
Yes, it is.
I still want to remove my upper lip.
You only got a couple of days left.
Yes.
Friday, you can take it off.
Is that it?
I guess Saturday.
That's it.
Saturday's so. December 1st, so
anyway,
you can shave.
It's for a good cause, so.
Yeah. How much money have you guys raised?
Well, we're still doing pretty weak, but I don't think all our money's in. I know online we have $165, but I think there's a few other people to donate into there.
Yeah.
I know my uncle has almost hit the $700 mark with
Holy.
His, so I was like,
nice.
He was at $695, and I think.
Wow.
Putting a little pressure for people for an extra $5, so.
That's impressive.
I'll have to put a little donation in there, so.
Yeah, cool.
Actually, it's pretty impressive just to see how well Canada does as a country.
Right.
Towards that fundraising for this event, so.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Did you hear anything about the junior hot competition results, or?
I did, actually. I had a quite an interesting conversation with Leslie Staff, the president of the Chefs Association.
Yeah.
She was there with, who was it? Don McRae and Renald St. Pierre were the two judges for that event.
Mm-hmm.
I know Leslie and Renald were actually down in Victoria for the... Chef of the Year competition there.
Cool.
And so they were down there. I believe they went down there Sunday night and then raced back Monday they went down there Saturday night, came back on Monday morning. So it was a really quick thing.
Yeah.
So the Chef of the Year went quite well down in Victoria. Mm-hmm. The winner was from Laurel Point, and I can't read my handwriting, so I'll have to double check on... the chef that won was from Laurel Point, and I think her name's Catherine, and I can't pronounce her last name because I can't read my writing.
Right.
So that was kind of exciting. And here at North Island College, who was it? They had three people that kind of stepped up. Tina, Lori, and Sarah. They were the both doing pretty well with the points.
Yeah.
Leslie was pretty impressed actually with everyone.
Cool.
She says these three that they won a sponsorship or help to go to the hot competition in Vancouver in January. So it
cool.
sounds like there'll be at least three people heading over for that event, which will be kind of interesting.
Good representation.
I mean they're judged on a bunch of criteria and how well they put the food all together, the portion size, the time that it takes them to do it, you know, and just presentation in general. So they said everyone did really well, but a little bit of room for improvement in a couple areas. But yeah,
that's a pretty big competition for you know, an apprentice to jump into something like that. And
It's a lot of homework.
It's intense.
You can tell the people who put the effort and the homework into it because there's a lot of studying.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they have to have portion controls, get their sizes right.
And
not only of having all that stuff measured and proper, but making it taste good and look good.
So yeah, for sure.
It's definitely a challenge, especially in a certain amount of time, right?
Oh, yeah. Pressure's on.
The pressure. It is the Iron Chef competition.
That's right.
Just on a without the TV cameras.
Yeah.
And the commentaries.
So. Yeah.
So yeah, it was good for junior chefs and some apprentices to do that. So mm-hmm. I think they had wanna say 6 people in total compete.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I think 2 people in the level 2 and 4 in the level 1.
Good.
Compete. So that's a good show for some local people.
Yeah.
What else is going on?
There's a guest coming to be on the kitchen door, and is it this weekend coming up?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
December 1st?
Should
be the day this will come out.
He's doing some cooking shows or cooking classes. Eric Akis, who does the food recipes for the
Thrifties. Yeah.
Thrifties, and he writes for the Times Colonist.
Okay.
Definitely an interesting person. He's does a cookbook series called the
Everyone Can Cook.
Yeah. Yes, that's it. Sorry, I was slipping my mind for a second. Everyone Can Cook, and I think this is Everyone Can Cook Everything.
Right.
So he's going back over some of his favorite recipes and sort of showcasing some of those. So
I like the idea of that. Everyone can cook because everyone should cook.
Yeah, and his recipes are very easy to follow and very good. So yeah,
right on.
It's got some.
That'll be interesting and fun for the ladies at Beyond the Kitchen Door.
Exactly, for sure. Especially after them letting us use their kitchen 2 weeks ago. So
that was such a great opportunity for us to be able to go in there and do that.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure.
And to have their company there while we were doing the show, and Sue was full of. Full of things to say.
Oh, I like always. So.
So, yeah. And so, yeah, thanks Sue and Teresa for letting us do that. And hopefully we'll do that again sometime.
For sure.
Because it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I also saw that Campbell River North Island College Theater, they've got the film on the future of food.
Which is tomorrow night, after the...
So it'll be after the fact.
Yes,
so
so
if anyone has gone up there and got a chance to check it out, love to hear what they thought about
Arzina that. Is doing a talk there.
That's true.
Yes. So it's about keeping GMO food out of our foodscape, I guess, sort of thing. So there's a number of municipalities around BC that are starting to ban it. I know Souk and I'm pretty sure it was Souk and Machozen have all said no. And Richmond, I think, did too. But anyway, Arzina's quite a expert on the subject. So
it's the big topic right now.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Genetically modified foods.
Yeah,
and what it means to our future. So
yeah. I'm not going to get into it right now, but
we could be here for days.
Definitely something I'm passionate about as well.
True.
Just not as educated as Arzina is, and many other people, but very opinionated.
That's right, for sure.
That's not like me to be opinionated, is it?
Not at all. Next, I guess I could talk a little bit about the cafe because it's been doing quite well. I have new staff, so that's kind of interesting.
Yep,
got two new guys into senior position.
Yeah,
Christopher Thrift and Robert Nittle. Which is, we like call him Bob.
Yeah.
So they've joined the team. So that's good for us. Put a little bit more creativity in the kitchen. And
takes a little pressure off of your schedule too, maybe?
A little off my schedule for the last little bit. Give me a little bit of time to breathe and stuff like that.
Good.
Now it comes at a loss because Paul DeRitter, who has been with us for over 3 years now.
Yeah.
Definitely a backbone of the kitchen. He's starting up his own catering company. So I know he's full up with Christmas bookings and stuff like that right now.
Yeah,
so.
For sure.
So yeah, I think it's the Bee's Knees Catering.
Cool.
Is what he's doing. So yeah, I wish him all the luck.
Good luck with that, Paul.
I know he'll be successful with it, so.
Yeah. Oh, he's going to be run off his feet in the next month, that's for sure.
Exactly. No worse than the rest of us, so.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should sort of get on to what the show is about today.
Yeah, so let's, we'll shift gears and we'll get into, we'll bring Drex in the studio and we'll talk a little bit about the test kitchen and how that went down for us.
And some local food.
Yeah, you bet. Hey, Drex, welcome to your studio.
Yeah, it's weird. Usually I'm over there fixing things.
Yeah, well, you will be later.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we'll make a mess of this, no problems.
So. Yeah, we should. Yes, so we wanted to talk about the Edible Valley Test Kitchen we did.
Oh, it was good.
Yeah.
That was fun. It was fun just to watch someone prepare food for you, because usually when you go to a restaurant, you like sit there and you order. It's quiet. You're having a conversation with someone maybe you don't want to have a conversation with. And then the food comes out and you eat it and you're like, oh, this looks good. It's delicious. But it's good to see the behind the scenes of how it's done.
The process.
Yeah, that's the cool bit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I mean, just doing it to have an audience there in front of you is such a different experience.
Is that pressure for you as a chef?
There's a little bit of pressure, but it's that instant response to it, right? Like you put down something in front of someone and they're like, you're like, ooh, well, yeah. I never get oohs at work, right? Like
the servers get the oohs and you just get the...
I just get the...
machine peeling off.
So what you're saying is you like the instant gratification of
the
making
instant
something.
Gratification. It's kind of nice. It kind of makes it worthwhile sometimes.
Well,
so.
You know, because I was there with a few other people and you were cooking and you were helping. You were actually doing more eating than helping.
I was washing dishes.
And eating bacon-wrapped Fanny Bay oysters.
Oh, yeah,
that's true.
A lot of
that.
Did you notice he had a whole stash underneath the microwave that
I
he was hoarding
notice.
From people?
I know. He was popping them in as the day was going.
Well, you put them there. What was I supposed to do?
It was it was good to see, because I think it was like 11 courses or something like that. it was good to see the process of small things. Like I had never, I'm a huge fan of sweet things, and just to see someone make a chocolate mousse in front of you, like you don't usually you buy it, and it's like if you buy an instant packet mix or you look up something and you kind of always ruin it, but it's good to see. Because you made it from scratch, you melted the chocolate down, you had all the other bits and pieces that go into it, and it was good to see like something so good come together from all these different raw ingredients.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what we do all day, or at least I do all day long, so it's just fun to be out there and to showcase the things that I have learned. I'm always amazed how much I do know, you know, like I don't think I have that much knowledge, but then when you get up into a situation like that, it's pretty neat to be like, okay.
Well, it becomes second nature to you because you do it every day in, day out, whereas, you know, I can barely use a knife in my kitchen.
I think we all have that same thing going in our own separate careers. I mean, we're all doing something totally different from each other.
Yeah.
But then when you get to see what the other guy's doing, you're like, wow, you're good at what you do. But as that person, you're like, eh, whatever.
Like, you have incredible knife skills. Like, if I had his knife skills, my prep time in my kitchen for cooking my food would be cut in half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got practice, and you don't want to be scared of the blade.
Yeah, especially when you're cutting carrots. I'm always scared to cut carrots because it could slip. Yeah.
It's a tricky one. I've been bitten many a time by a carrot.
Gotta make a flat spot on it.
That's right.
I still won't get a mandolin. I noticed you were using a mandolin for slicing certain things.
Exactly.
I'm
a huge fan of the mandolin, but I always leave, you know, I leave an inch left. If you're doing a carrot, leave an inch left on top. You can use it for something else. That's
stock
like,
pot.
You don't need to get that close. Use half of something on a mandolin, and then save the rest for something else.
And you get you get those people that buy those cheap mandolins, and they're just an accident waiting to happen.
They are a disaster right there.
Yeah.
So pay the money for a mandolin.
Yeah.
Use the guard.
Oh, there's is that what that's for?
Yeah.
It's like that one thing you leave in the box. Like, God,
I
need that.
I don't know. It's going to slip on there. No, sometimes that guard's a good thing. So. But yeah, I've had lots of practice with the mandolin, and never look away from the mandolin.
I'd forgotten what else you made. What was the pork thing that you made on that night?
Well, I mean, the pork, I did the apple kale stuffed pork loin.
From Tannadice Farms.
From Tannadice Farms, which was part of the pig that Blaine cleaned up for us. So.
Wow. That pig went a long way.
Oh, yeah. You should see how much is in my freezer.
Isn't that? You made bacon tonight, actually. We had that with the chicken that you made for tonight's dinner. I was surprised that cooked so quickly, that pork.
It does. Pork it cooks very quickly. And you don't want to overcook it, right? Like, it's definitely the old thing of cooking pork to well done.
Yeah.
You don't have to do
it anymore. It's not the 40s anymore.
It's not the 40s. Yeah. I mean, you should do a medium to be safe and stuff like that, but...
Well, there's two different types of pork. There's, oh my God, this is delicious, then this is really dry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's usually the well-done cooked pork. You leave that little bit of moisture still there in the pork.
That was good. That was very delicious.
Yeah. Well, it helped that we had the nice chanterelle mushrooms that Blaine managed to find on his bike ride.
Yeah. I've never had those before.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Are they really like a thing you have to go hunting for?
Oh yeah, they're definitely wild from the forest. It's the only place you can find them.
Is there people that woman got lost in Powell River when she went looking for chanterelle mushrooms? But is it like people go out with a bag and just go
all the
hunt
time
mushrooms?
I do it all fall.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite hobbies. Yeah,
my mother-in-law, she runs up into the forest all the time and she takes a bag and a knife whenever she goes for a walk. And
how do you know what you're getting?
Because I've been doing it since I was 5 years old. So
really?
30 years experience of picking chanterelle mushrooms. My grandpa took me out when I was...
Oh, so you were educated in the art of mushroom picking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's once you know what a chanterelle looks like, you kind of get the feel for what they look like.
Yeah.
They've got the wide open veins and they've got the... You're looking for that nice golden orange color on them.
I think the experience comes not in identifying, but being able to see them because they tend to grow where there's other things of the similar colors like leaves that have fallen.
Oh, really? Because they're like damp sort of conditions, obviously.
They're in the forest. So you're looking for them and you see something orange, but you're not sure if it's a mushroom or a salal leaf or an alder leaf or so.
I use a lot of curse words when I go mushroom picking because I always go and pick up that leaf and I'm like, that's not a mushroom.
Oh, really? Is it bitterly disappointing when it's not what you want
for
it to be?
For myself, yes. Blaine, on the other hand, he's like...
I just point him out to him.
There's he just points John. To him.
Pick it.
It's kind of, it kind of reminds me of pigs hunting for truffles.
It is a little bit like that.
Yeah. But it's super fun and we had such a poor fall for it. The weather was so nice and so dry. It was great for us, but... The mushrooms didn't like it, so I...
And they just grow wild?
Mm-hmm.
What other sort of stuff grows wild like that around you?
Oh, there's all sorts of mushrooms that grow wild. There's berries, there's, I don't know, like all kinds of edible plants. The forest is full of edible plants.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm no expert. I'm interested and I'm learning, but yeah, there's so much out
there. Like if there was no food source, I'd be screwed. I wouldn't know what to do.
Well, you're pretty good around here because, I mean, there is such an abundance in the woods.
If you got to know what you're looking for, though. I'd be the type of guy that goes, oh, that looks delicious, and then die like Christopher McCandless in that movie. Right?
Don't eat the berries. Yeah.
But, I mean, in this area, there's not that much that's that bad. There's a few things, but it's not like you're going to get carried off by a lion or something like that.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Well, we'll get you out and we'll take you down oyster picking. Soon.
Oh yeah, that's a definite.
And then you'll know one wild edible food source.
Yeah, I guess.
So yeah, we'll go down there with some headlamps and
straight off the rocks is good.
Oh yeah,
fresh.
Do you eat them raw?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good.
Oh yeah, some people cannot stomach raw oysters. I don't know why. Like that's. Yeah.
I love them. Took me a while, but now they're great.
My dad used to get them. We used to have this. This like guy that would, it was like a fish market where I grew up, and he would go out and do his own oystering stuff, and we'd buy them by the tray, still in their shells.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad always used to get them and put them on an oven tray, put a little bit of Worcestershire sauce, and then I can't remember what it was. It was like this mixture he would do with like breadcrumbs, and then he would stick them in the oven,
mm-hmm.
and it was delicious.
Yeah. Oysters are great.
Eat it with a little salad fork.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, and it's our biggest product here, right?
Yeah, it's our biggest agricultural product for sure, shellfish. Sure. Yeah, but they're also good shucked from Fanny Bay oysters wrapped in Tannadice bacon.
Yeah, that was, I mean, and we used that, the tatsoi.
Right.
Which was a new product from Eat More Sprouts because they donated a bunch of food to us.
Yeah, that was the one with the sort of mustardy sort of flavor to it?
That's right,
That was neat stuff.
And just a quick little sauté with a little cream and some curry in there and some sautéed onions.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the oysters, bacon-wrapped oysters on that. So
how come that's not a popular vegetable?
Well, it's more of an Asian vegetable, so I don't think it's really gotten into our market, right?
Do you think it's like it's where kale was 5 years ago?
I'm thinking it's, definitely.
I remember when I was a kid, my dad would get kale shipped to his butcher shop to put in between the meat to make it look pretty.
Yeah.
And now it's a thing that we eat.
Yeah. Well, you know, and in the restaurants, it was basically a garnish for myself when I started out. I'm like, oh, it looks really pretty on the plate.
Always eat the garnish, always have.
Yeah, but but now I'm like, oh, why don't I start cooking with it? And the big trend right now is like kale Caesar salads.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, because it's that... You got that Caesar salad. It's got that hearty flavor, you know, like it's
like
a strong flavor.
I don't like it raw.
Yeah, well, you can do a little grilling on the a head of kale and grilled off with a little Caesar salad in it. Yeah, but apparently that's the
I think
the
I know what I'm going to make one trend. Day this week coming up. Maybe I'll go pick up some kale this weekend and try that out. That sounds awesome.
Have either of you two made kale chips?
I haven't made them myself. Yeah, I've eaten them, but I don't. Yeah, I don't really enjoy them all that
they're
much.
Gross. It's. Yeah. It's. I like it. So, like, what did you saute with apple and what was it?
With the kale and
yeah,
the
what
stuffing.
Was that?
That was apple. Yeah. That, so I just had some nice apples. Was it Gala apples? I believe.
It was like it was cooked off. That was,
yeah.
Was
I just
good.
I sauteed off the apples first, and then just threw the kale in there just to wilt it a little bit.
So are you gonna try and work more tatsoi into things that you make now?
When they get back up and going, I think so. I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think just throwing into like a stir fry.
That'd be good, actually, wouldn't it?
Just it would add a nice little characteristic to it.
So. I think Amy and Andrew are going to be doing some different things at Eat More. I think they're pretty keen on trying things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty exciting because that tatsoi is one of those things that I don't think anybody else really is growing. I haven't seen it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
so,
and there are some other farms that are definitely branching up and doing some really neat things.
Yeah.
So. Well, if you don't try something, you don't get anything new, do you?
That's right.
Right.
So. Yeah. You can't just eat carrots and broccoli all the time.
Broccoli's good for you, though.
It is good, but it's also nice to have a.
I did have some local broccoli on the plate.
Oh,
if
you did
remember,
too, actually.
That was with a pork. I put a little carrots.
That's right. Yeah.
Carrots, which we got from Freedom Farm. So they had their heirloom carrots.
Yep.
Which I just love purple carrots.
Yeah, purple carrots are cool.
Like, I'm done with orange carrots. You know.
Yeah,
some fair in Holland that we all eat orange carrots.
Was it you that told us the story like that night of how carrots became orange?
Yeah, it's because someone said that it was for a festival. I think it was in Holland. I'm maybe wrong.
Sounds like the sort of place that have a carrot.
Yeah,
festival.
And they had a big carrot festival, so everything had to be orange. And
oh, really?
And so then that's how they kind of standardized carrots should be orange, and that was what people went after. And it's only been recently that the heirloom varieties have started popping back with the purple and the, I mean, they're not as distinct in because they have veins in them and they're like it's not a solid purple color through it, but it's a flavorful product. There's much more flavor in it.
I think it'd be more attractive to children to eat too.
Probably.
If you served a child a purple carrot, they would be more likely to eat it than an orange one.
Well, it's like purple potatoes.
Oh, because there's all different colors and shapes of potatoes as well, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Wow.
When you start getting into heirloom varieties of anything, there's all sorts of randomness about it. There's nothing conventional. You get different colors, different shapes, different sizes. Like tomatoes can be green and purple and red, and same with potatoes, same with carrots, you know, like.
I am in, Jerry Patterson does the heirloom carrots. And I used them up on Mount Washington, and they were so pretty. I made this tomato soup with them, and they were so beautiful. I had to serve raw tomato on top of the soup just so that people could see how nice they were. Like, I had these beautiful green tomatoes, and they had little speckles in them, and it was just so sharp that we had to slice 100 beautiful little tomatoes on top of each one. It was just beautiful. And I think it was the most talked about dish of that dinner. And it was such
a
simple
thing
dish.
Is if you put the effort into it, people talk about it, right?
Yeah.
It's finding those interesting things that you can put into food that make it a little bit more interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's all about experimenting, too.
I love that you used a standard Halloween pumpkin to make soup.
Why not?
I don't think many people finish with the pumpkin, we'll put it outside, they'll rot away.
No.
They don't keep the middle bit. Some people do because they make the pumpkin seeds.
The pumpkin seeds.
Yeah.
But no, that was a fabulous soup. Like it was so simple, right? Like I just roasted it in the oven, scraped it out, sauteed some onions and some garlic and threw it in there, and it was a little chicken stock.
And you added something to it. Was it a pumpkin seed oil or something that you had?
I did. I had some pumpkin seed oil that I picked up when I was in Austria a little while back.
Wow.
Just beautiful flavor to it, and just added that extra tinge
to it.
Yeah,
that was good. That was good food. I was full.
Can't forget the yogurt, too, because we did have some
Tree
Island
yogurt. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
So
it was all good. Everything that was good. I think, you know, a lot of people, one of the things that everyone mentioned is the fact that you were able to make so many different full dishes out of lots of local different things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people think about it in that way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes maybe they should.
Well, and that's why we started doing this.
Yeah, to showcase the local ingredients and what's available.
Yeah.
Because there is an incredible amount of variety here all year round that, yeah, like you said, people aren't aware of. So,
Well, I mean, we could talk about dinner tonight because we got the chicken from Tannadice Farms.
Which is a good chicken.
Did the beer can chicken, which I've got this beer can holder years ago, and I've never touched it. And I've always been kind of tempted to it. So I'm like, and I fell out of the cupboard on me the other day, and I'm like, I got to use this thing. Like, this is perfect, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I went down to the liquor store today, or actually one of the beer and wines, and I was looking for a local beer, and the only can, which was perfect, actually, Vancouver Island Brewery, their pale ale. I thought, that's perfect beer.
Yeah.
It was the only thing local in cans. So I'm like, boom, that's in there. So I got to sample half the beer, which was great for me. And then we roasted off that chicken, and it went. I did it in the oven. I mean, I know it's supposed to be barbecued. A lot of people barbecue it, but I thought, oh, I'll give it a shot.
Can I go back to the beer can chicken holder for a second?
Yes.
I'm guessing that you, as a chef, it was a gift that someone bought you at some stage. Was it a gift?
I'm pretty sure my father gave it to me.
Because here's the thing: is I've always thought this. Because you know how you have people that do certain jobs. What is the perfect gift that you get them that relates to their job? I would imagine that your father was thinking, "Oh, I'll get him that beer can thing. He'll use that because he's a chef." So this is the first time you've used it?
The first time I've used it. And it's funny because I talked to my dad today, and he's like, "I've got three of them."
He must really like beer can chicken.
My dad really likes to cook. So that's I definitely learned some of my passion of cooking from him.
Have you tried his beer can chicken?
I have never tried his beer can chicken.
Wow.
So I know now I've had mine.
Yeah. Will you do it again?
I would do a beer can chicken. I want to do it in the barbecue next time. I think that's the way to go, and I'd like to smoke it a little bit.
Yeah. It was nice and moist. I'll tell you that. I saw the picture on your phone. It was like this big giant plump, like a chicken should look.
Yeah. I kind of thought it was a turkey.
It was huge.
Blaine dropped it off at my door this morning.
How much did it weigh? Do you know?
I didn't actually weigh
it. Probably about 7-8 pounds.
Wow, that is a big chicken.
It's a huge chicken.
Big chicken. And you know, something that big you think might be a little chewy, but
no,
it was good.
It was good.
It's just a happy chicken that gets to eat lots of good stuff out in the pasture.
I got to tell you, because as a not so much of I like, you know, put a plate of food in front of me, I won't be able to tell you exactly what's going on there. But as a person that likes flavor and presentation of food, I was extremely impressed that I got the first cut of chicken breast.
Yes,
because it was a curved piece with skin. I was like, yes,
yeah,
it's like Christmas.
Yeah, you got the good piece on that shot.
Were those smashed potatoes?
Yes, smashed with some potatoes, and that was actually done in the little bit of bacon fat and butter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So we sauteed that bacon in there, and yeah, I'm a big fan of mashed or crushed potatoes.
Yeah,
so
yeah, they're awesome.
They're fun.
It was a good chicken, and the slaw you made was amazing as well.
Yeah, so that was some of the cabbage actually that we had. I've had that for a week or so.
Yeah.
From the test kitchen actually. Yeah. So I just had it wrapped in the fridge, so I just thought,
oh that was the purple cabbage?
The purple cabbage, yeah. So I sliced that up and just did my old did a little local honey actually in there and did a little mustard. Honey mustard vinaigrette to go on top of that. So.
And your bacon kind of complemented that as well.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. It was good. Yeah, just added a little extra salt to everything.
I was kind of thinking about, you know, the barbecue being outside. When I was thinking the beer can, and like, this should be a barbecue sort of event, but I'm kind of getting sick of the rain right now, so.
Yeah.
Kind of made me feel, reminded me of the summer a bit, so.
Yeah.
You just get one of those pop-up 10x10 so you can barbecue throughout the winter.
I've thought about it. Actually, I want to cover my deck.
Do it. Then you can barbecue all year round.
All year round.
People don't barbecue enough.
No.
I love the smell of barbecue. You know when you walk past someone, like if you're going for a walk in the afternoon, you smell barbecue, it's like, I want to go to their house.
Because
you know it's going to be good.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what you throw in a barbecue, it's always going to be good, right? So.
Yeah, I know. I have all these awesome cuts of meat in my freezer that I should be barbecuing.
Yeah.
But I actually can because my deck, the overhang, I can pull the barbecue right to my sliding door.
That's barbecue from standing outside in the house. Yeah,
the barbecue is just outside.
That's that is the dictionary definition of laziness.
Yes, it is.
And you should empower that.
Yes. I should, and I don't get wet. I don't have to get my feet wet.
Yeah.
It's good.
Cooking is meant to be comfortable.
That's yes, right. You bet. Supposed to enjoy it. So.
Yeah. I can't. I'm not allowed to cook chickens in my house. Not allowed to, because I screw it up every time.
Oh,
chicken.
Yeah, screw it up every time. Like I can a whole cook. Chicken? I can cook a steak, like you know, because I'm the son of a butcher. I know how to cook a piece of meat, right? I get it. I understand it. But put any sort of poultry in my kitchen, bad idea.
Doesn't work, eh?
Yeah, it's going to be bloody and. Yeah.
Do you have a slow cooker?
I do. The slow cook is good because you can't screw up anything in a slow cooker. You can literally just dump it in and go, oh, that doesn't look very good. And come back 6 hours later and it's like, wow, you're a gourmet chef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite ways to cook chicken lately. Any chicken on the bone, like legs or thighs, I just put some dry rub on it, throw it in the slow cooker in the morning, and then I turn it on and then I go to work and I come home and it's awesome. And then there's all this great juice and fat in the bottom that can make gravy with.
I do my ribs in the slow cooker.
That's the way.
So this is, and I'll give you the recipe. It's very easy. You ready for this? So this is what I do. I get two racks of ribs, curl them in half so they fit in there. I put in, believe it or not, 2 cans of Coke.
Yeah.
Right? I put in an entire bottle of Baby Ray's barbecue sauce.
Yeah.
Right? I suck up some of the juice out of the thing, just shake it up to get all the sauce out.
Right.
I let it cook for about 8 hours. Then I take out the ribs and they're just ready to fall apart. I take them out, let them cool down a bit. Then I take all the juice and I put it in a saucepan and I reduce it down into like a, so it becomes a sauce again.
Right.
And then I stick it in the oven and just baste that for another 3 or 4 hours in foil.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when are we doing Edible Valley Test Kitchen at Drex's house?
Going over for ribs.
And you know what? I'd never tried sort of barbecue-y sort of flavored things before I had moved to Canada.
Yeah.
It wasn't really, like pulled pork isn't a thing that you would do in Australia. It's just not done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I started experimenting with more food when I moved here because I would go to restaurants and see these interesting things on menus and think, oh, what's pulled pork? I had no idea what that was.
Right, yeah.
So anything to do with pigs and barbecue sauce, I'm down for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should actually do that with one of my pork roasts. We should do some pulled pork one night.
Yeah, that would be... Take a full day to do that.
Yeah, pulled pork.
Have you ever had a root beer pulled pork?
No.
Yeah, a friend of mine does a root beer pulled pork.
Sounds good.
It's got a really good flavor to it.
I just remember we used to do them in the old days. I haven't done pulled pork for a while, but just throwing them in a brine and some beer. I mean, I did the chicken today. That's one thing that I'm getting into is brines. I'm almost brining's at the point good. That every piece of meat you have, you should brine.
Yeah.
Explain a brine.
Just a salt solution, right? Like just a little salt, a little sugar, and lots of water. And just let the meat absorb. The meat gives a chance to absorb the...
Like stick it in a bucket liquor. Almost?
In a bucket. That's what I did with the chicken today. I did a little bit of soy sauce, some salt, sugar. I did sea salt.
Cause bucket beer chicken.
And just put it in a bowl, threw it in the fridge for about 4 hours.
You can put whatever herbs and seasonings you want in it, really. And just
I do pork loins a lot of times where I'll cook off some apples and some.
If you didn't have a lot of room in your fridge and you wanted to do that to a chicken, could you put in like one of those large Ziploc bags, put the chicken in, put it in, seal it up, just stick it in the fridge?
Oh, yeah, for easy.
Yeah.
Anything where it's sort of marinating in
a
liquid.
Just keeping that liquid and you want to get it completely sealed in the liquid. And it's just that the proteins are going to soak up that moisture and add it to their body. So
that's actually a really good idea. Does it tenderize the meat in any way?
Well, it moistens it. So yes, it does, right? Like it's adding more moisture into it, and that's where you get your chewiness is when you lose that moisture.
My stepdad does that with turkeys all the time.
Yeah.
Brines it.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never even heard of that before.
Yeah. So I also, the other thing I do is I like to always hit it with a bit of boiling water, the skin.
Before you cook it?
Before I cook it, I'll take boiling water and pour it over so that the skin actually tightens up and it seals the outside of the chicken or turkey if you're doing it that way. So it'll seal the outside of it so then all those juices stay inside.
Wow.
Nice. Never.
This
heard
has
that
turned into
before.
A clinic.
Yeah,
well,
I know.
It's sort of like a lot of meats too is like with even like a pork loin or a roast or anything, searing the outside and then throwing it in the oven to finish it. And what you're doing is you're sealing the outside.
So
all that moisture stays in the middle and it keeps there. Whereas when you put something in slow, it leaches out.
I guarantee I would still screw it up if it's a chicken. You can only try it, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's been a while since I've done a whole chicken.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, whole chicken's a little different than when
it's cut up. I went looking for my meat thermometer today and that was... gone. So I think I must have stolen it for the cafe. So I was poking it and crossing my fingers that there was no blood coming in. And actually the first time I poked it, I was considering it was probably almost done there, but I got that nice red coming out. So I went in for another 20 minutes or so. So
yeah. No, oh, that was good. I like chicken.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I've eaten Tinnitus chicken too. So that was, good, really good.
Definitely a winner there. So yeah. Well, the whole test kitchen idea for us is fun because it gives us something to eat before we come in here, and it's just fun to play with local ingredients.
So. Yeah.
It's good that they have that huge kitchen down there too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Beyond the Kitchen Door's kitchen, that was, yeah, it's so cool.
And everything's in there. There's like every gadget you could ever think of in that kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to get somebody in from the store and talk about Christmas gifts.
And some of the classes they've done down there. So.
You know what I saw, and I think you saw this on the night we were there. Afterwards, when we were packing up, there was a, I don't even know what you call it now, where you can sort of push down ground beef. Did you remember that little tool?
We were laughing at that ground meat.
Yeah.
Masher.
Yeah. So you know when you like, if you're gonna make a spaghetti bolognese or something like that, like something like really hearty and filling, and you're cooking up your ground beef, and you're kind of getting a wooden spoon and kind of hitting it to sort of break it down, mm-hmm. so it becomes like almost like particles.
Yeah. Right.
There's a little thing you can get that you can just smash it down with.
Hmm. Yeah, because it was sort of like an X.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Plastic X.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like a knife blade.
Sort of. Thing,
but
sort of.
It's like a potato masher mixed with a knife.
That's plastic that can go in a nonstick pan.
And you just do that and it breaks it all up for you.
You know what? I'm always amazed with the toys they have there.
Yeah.
Some stuff is beyond me, but other things I'm just like, I get a chance to try and I'm like,
best kitchen invention in the last 10 years. Go.
Best kitchen
invention. Well, 20 years.
You know what? I'm going to say sous vide.
This is
temperature control cooking. So sous vide is like doing in cryovac bags.
Yeah.
So you can take a piece of meat and you can stick flavor in it.
Yeah.
You can season it or whatever, and then you throw it into a bath of water and you cook it at a precise temperature, which doesn't flex, like only is like within 1 or 2 degrees flex in it. So you can do like corned beef. And you can cook it for 12 hours, and it'll be the most tender, flavorful piece of meat you've ever had in your life, right? Like, it just takes it to a whole nother level.
Well, that's high tech.
But this is...
It's like Jetson's cooking or
they
something.
Don't
I was happy with the potato rasa, but anyway.
Yeah, no, this is... That would be, for me, is probably one of the most incredible. So you can cook steaks. So you can put a medium-rare steak. You can cook it perfectly straight through so the thing is perfectly pink. Mind you, you have to remember that it's not seared on the outside, so it's perfectly cooked through the middle. So you take it out of this bag,
and sear it,
real quick, and then put it on the plate.
Do many restaurants do that?
There's quite a few restaurants. I don't know of any in the Comox Valley that are running sous vide. It's a little bit. There's a little bit of science behind it. So
wow.
we did play. One of my cooks bought one. He was. He was online late one night and had his credit card nearby and bought himself.
That happens.
Yeah. I don't think his wife was very impressed, but we played with it a bit, and it was quite fun to cook salmon to that perfect temperature. So you get your internal temperatures, you can hit them, and it'll cook to that point, and it won't cook past it, right?
I never even knew that was a thing.
That is a thing.
Did you know that was a thing?
No, never heard of it before.
Oh.
No, it's taking your slow cooker to the whole next level.
Yeah.
Like, you could take your ribs, everything, put them in that bag, and cook them there. So instead
of
your
Ada... I
could
cook a chicken in that bag and never screw it up.
Never screw it up.
There you go.
Here's the unfortunate bit about doing a chicken.
There's always a downfall.
Yeah. No, you can cook it perfectly.
Yeah.
It'll be pink. I saw one that... Because you actually get... You can cook it to like 150 or whatever. I saw them do a perfect turkey once where they actually took the bones out and put piping through it to cook... the turkey to the perfect internal temperature, but it was pink meat because the protein doesn't cook or doesn't
dissipate from the
it doesn't, and so it keeps that moisture, keeps that color. So it's a little bit of
skepticism when you see it.
Skepticism when you're like, this is pink. It's not cooked, but it's actually cooked to the perfect temperature.
Like someone seeing a purple carrot for the first time. Exactly. I don't know about a purple carrot.
Yeah. So a lot of people think it's undercooked, but it's actually cooked to the perfect temperature.
Wow.
So.
I think we've all learned something here tonight. I really do.
Yes, I do too. Thanks, Drex, for coming in and pinch hitting tonight.
Thanks. It was fun.
Yeah. We've been wanting to have you in here to talk since we've been doing this, but we've always had other people, so. Mm,
it's a busy show.
Yeah, it's good. It's nice to hear your take on some things, too. So, do we have any news, John, of upcoming events? I know Hans-Peter Meyer's coming in next week to give us a rundown, because I think all the events that we have are all over.
Especially as of when this podcast comes out. I mean, Winterfest is still taking place downtown, so there's lots of events happening down there.
Yep.
I know there's some too many things to really...
Yeah, just things constantly going on.
Constantly going on there, so I definitely recommend checking there. Checking them online and seeing what's happening on a day-to-day basis. We were looking into doing a little prize, too, weren't we? For December.
For December, yeah, for new Facebook likes.
Yeah.
So we're thinking about maybe a gift certificate to Atlas Cafe.
That's right.
So if you haven't liked us on Facebook and you're listening to this, like us, and we'll keep track of everybody who is our new followers. And we'll put you in a draw at the end of the month and you get a New Year's surprise.
That's right. So we thought, just get a little more excitement and give us a reason to start actually putting some more postings up there and some more advice. And if you know anyone out there that you want to learn a little bit more, we'd love to bring them on the show and chat with them.
Yeah, absolutely. We're always looking for guest suggestions, and email us questions, cooking questions, if you're stumped on a technique to do something or anything like that. Pick John's brain. That's what he's here for.
And if I don't know, we do bring in quite a few chefs, so it'd be a good question to stump some of them as well.
That's right, We can always pass that along. Thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. We gratefully accept donations to help with the operating costs of the podcast or local ingredients to create new dishes in the Edible Valley Test Kitchen. Check out our website, ediblevalley.com. Like us on Facebook, maybe you'll win a prize, and follow our Twitter feed at Edible Valley. Email us with your comments or guests you would like to hear on the show, and don't hesitate, as I just mentioned, to send along your cooking questions for John to answer on the show or to pick our brains about other local food information. Edible Valley at gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, keep it local.